We're honored to have with us this evening Elder Marvin J. Ashton of the Council of the Twelve. Elder Ashton is a member of the Board of Trustees. He's also a member of our executive committee of that board, and is a true friend, a dear friend of BYU. We welcome you, Elder Ashton and Sister Ashton, to our BYU family gathering, and we're so grateful that you consent to be with us this evening as we prepare for another school year. Elder Ashton was born and educated in Salt Lake City. He was named a member of the Council of the Twelve in 1971. One church leader said of him, "Elder Ashton seems to have a gift for seeing through the huff and puff of life, the temptations, excuses, and facades common to mortality, and reducing them to their lowest denominator. He sees the best in people without becoming complacent about their weaknesses. He has a way of motivating you to let go of your faults and weaknesses." And President Kimball wrote of him, "He is a rare leader who both listens and counsels. Thousands of lives, both young and old, have been blessed by the wisdom of this noble man, wonderful apostle, and friend." May I just add my own personal note. I first met this wonderful man when I was a student here. In the old days, when there was such thing as the YMMIA General Board, we were both on that board. We met every Wednesday night. And I learned at that early age that Marvin J. Ashton was truly one of the greats that the Lord has placed on the earth here in this dispensation. He and Sister Ashton, the former Norma Burnson, have four children. We are honored to welcome with us this evening Elder Ashton.
May I just read and share with you the note that you have on your brochure? "We are thus highly favored, for we have these glad tidings declared unto us in all parts of our vineyard. My respected associates of this great Brigham Young University, I am honored, challenged, and pleased to be with you on this occasion. I hope my remarks and observations will bring glad tidings unto your various responsibilities and assignments, as well as in your lives. As I stand before you, I remind you of what I constantly try to remind myself, that I was asked to be with you and speak on this subject because of the office I fill and not because of any superlative qualities I possess. A week ago, I was reading from some of the writings of our prophet Ezra Taft Benson and was again impressed by his thoughts and his relationships to others. He said, among my most revered associations with all of the brethren was President J. Reuben Clark, Jr. He was a mentor to a few of us seated here today. His was a depth of intellect and breadth of wisdom that marked him a giant among men. And that because these qualities were tempered with deep humility and a sense of great reverence and dependency upon God. He referred to President J. Reuben Clark as his mentor and openly acknowledged how he was taught, tempered, and trusted by this great leader. May I incidentally remind you, by definition, a mentor is a wise and trusted teacher or guide. He, President Clark, said on one very moving occasion, the youth of the church, your students, are in the great majority sound in thought and in spirit. The problem primarily is to keep them sound, not to convert them. The youth of the church are hungry for things of the spirit, and they are eager to learn the gospel, and they want it straight, undiluted. They want to know about the fundamentals, about our beliefs. They want to gain testimonies of their truth. And they are not doubters, but inquirers seekers after truth. Mark this. Doubt must not be planted in their hearts. These students crave the faith of their fathers and mothers, the kind they have. They want it in its simplicity and purity. They wish to be not only the beneficiaries of this faith, but they want to be themselves able to work to bring it forth. You teachers have a great mission. As teachers, you stand upon the highest peak in education for what teaching can compare in priceless value and in far-reaching effect with that which deals with man as he was in the eternity of yesterday, and as he is in the mortality of today, and as he will be in the forever of tomorrow. Not only time, but eternity is your field. As teachers, administrators, staff, and friends, you have the opportunity to mentor many. How rewarding it will be to be mentored to those who associate with you on a closely or on a daily basis. I like to think that in the immediate days past that I can identify with President N. Eldon Tanner, a counselor in the first presidency to four presidents, not only as a prophet, seer, and revelator, and apostle, but a mentor. He took the time and the occasion to lift, teach, and lead me and others when teaching moments and occasions were available. He was always bigger than any challenging problem. Seemed to me that whenever there were special or weighty decisions to be made at the highest levels of the church in the first presidency or the Council of the Twelve, he had a unique capacity to be wise when others were disappointed, shocked, or dismayed. Never in a spirit of disgust or hurt did I ever hear him say, "Oh no," or "How could she or he do that?" It was always, "What can we do to help him or her?" He was a solver, never a moaner. Let me take this opportunity to thank President Rex E. Lee for his leadership, what he is and what he does. As he mentioned earlier, almost 34 years ago, he is called to serve on the general board of the Young Men's Mutual Improvement Association while I was in the presidency of that organization. He was a young returned missionary with exceptional dedication and talents. And as I look back now, I can see how he mentored some of us older ones as he vigorously championed programs for young men and young women. Today, yes, I and others can learn much if we appropriately respond to his leadership of this university. I remind you, you don't have to be older than others to be their mentor. Provost Bruce C. Haven, as an administrator, is a man who is honest and wise and good, and I'm pleased to labor with him also. May I now quote as a background and foundation for what I will refer to later, a statement recently made by your leaders from an internal document entitled Our Positioning Case Statement. As a church, university, BYU has the responsibility to help students develop their spiritual strengths as well as their academic proficiency, to help them learn that faith and reason go hand in hand. Wisdom, it has been revealed, is a result of acquiring knowledge through light and truth. Such enlightenment is said to be received through the heart, which encompasses more than just the intellect. Thus, it is often stated that BYU aims to educate the heart, for to educate just the mind would severely limit the human soul. Through this process of seeking for all truth in the light, BYU students learn wisdom, how to use truth for right and just purposes. The course is a rigorous one that involves both teacher and student, and includes development and respect for the spirit that is in each of them. I wholeheartedly endorse those guidelines of great wisdom. Now from the 98th section of the Doctrine and Covenants, verse 10, there are three words that I would like all of you to remember tonight, if you will, and I'd like to emphasize them. To be honest, wise, and good in your personal lives. BYU responsibilities and in the home. We should teach our associates and students by example the priceless strength that comes from this lifestyle. I would like to reinforce to you in your BYU situation of service that you have been sought out, interviewed, approved, and employed because of the quality of your lives. We who work with you look forward to upholding and sustaining you in your lofty righteousness performances. Some things change, and some remain the same. In the category of those that remain, the same as the relationship between Brigham Young University and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. BYU is owned and operated by the Church. During the lifetime of all of those present here this evening, the Church has appropriated to BYU a large portion of the tithing paid by members of the Church. Because of the importance the Church attaches to education, the Board of Trustees is composed of the most senior leaders of the Church. The Board of Trustees appoints the president and other leaders of the university, and the Board of Trustees makes the basic policy decisions about the nature and mission of the university and the way in which that mission will be accomplished. These things have not changed. In contrast, there have been enormous changes in the environment within which the university performs its mission. Not long ago, almost any young member of the church who desired to enroll at BYU in Provo or Hawaii or at Ricks College was able to attend admission. The remarkable growth of the church has changed that. Today, only a tiny fraction of the membership of the church can enroll at BYU or these other colleges. And that fraction gets smaller every year, even though the percent of tithing revenues devoted to higher education has not declined significantly. The contrast between those who are favored by admission and those who are not is very painful for all concerned. It inevitably causes all of us to have serious reflection about the mission of BYU and the way that mission is being performed. For the past 2 years, the Board of Trustees and Committee of the Board members, working with President Lee and his associates, have been given intensive and prayerful study to these fundamental issues, such as the nature of the university, how it is to be financed, how it relates to other parts of the church educational system, and how we determine who can and will be admitted. That work continues. Here on this campus, you have done impressive work on these and related problems. For example, the Board of Trustees is very impressed with the work of your faculty committee under the chairmanship of John Tanner. Their suggestions on definitions of academic freedom for the individual teacher and for the institution are vitally important. It is important that our teachers have the freedom to teach and research in their fields of study. At the same time, it is imperative that everyone who works at BYU and everyone who supports the university, and that includes every tithe payer in the church, understands the nature and mission of this university. We do not question the need to familiarize university students with facts that we deplore or theories we reject. But in the exercise of our institutional academic freedom, we do insist that teachers in the various institutions of our church education system not use their classroom or their privileged positions as professors to advocate or foster ideologies or philosophies or action that are contrary to the standards of the gospel of Jesus Christ, including standards of decency or morality that are embodied in the university's code of honor. The unworthy, the indecent, or the immoral have no place on this campus, no place in the programs of this great university, and no place in the personal conduct of our students or our faculty or supporting staff. We expect that our educational church leaders, the personnel, including the faculty and the staff and the administration at BYU, will be role models in the way they use the sacred resources appropriated by the church. This includes not only financial resources, but also the prestige they enjoy as representatives of this church. As members of the church, they should also be exemplary in the way they keep the commandments of God and the way they respond to the counsel our leaders give to them as members of the church. Wherefore, honest men and wise men should be sought for diligently, and good men and wise men you should observe to uphold. Otherwise, whatsoever is less than these cometh of evil. And I give unto you a commandment, that ye shall forsake all evil and cleave unto all good, that ye shall live by every word which proceedeth forth out of the mouth of God. For he will give unto the faithful line upon line, precept upon precept, and I will try you and prove you herewith. Close quote. May I encourage all of us this year as we approach new responsibilities and challenges to teach vigorously the basics of being honest, wise, and good in life and in the lecture room. The world today, yes, the church today, is looking for direction from those who live these traits. It seems today, as I travel and reorganize state presidencies and instruct mission presidents worldwide, I am getting back more and more to stressing these fundamental basics of the abundant life. The important roles of leadership must be wrapped in honesty, goodness, and wisdom, with wise performances. Love the scriptures. Teach and live through and by them. Teach and live with the gospel of Jesus Christ as your anchor, foundation, and inspiration. May I share with you a last paragraph from former Education Chief Secretary William J. Bennett's new book, The Devaluing of America. Quote, "Reclaiming our institution is less a political opportunity than a civic obligation. It involves hard work, but it is a work of eminent importance. At the end of the day, somebody's values will prevail. In America, we the people have a duty to insist that our institutions and our government be true to their time-honored tasks. In some instances, that means that the American people must roll up their sleeves and work to ensure that their institutions and government reflect their sentiments, their good sense, their sense of right and wrong. That is what a democracy, a government of, by, and for the people is all about. The debate has been joined, but the fight for our values has just begun," close quote. Let me share with you a remarkable statement by President Spencer W. Kimball that illustrates to us how we may develop more spirituality in our lives. And he said, "I find that when I get casual in my relationships with divinity And when it seems that no divine ear is listening and no divine voice is speaking, that I am far, far away. He continues, if I immerse myself in the scriptures, the distance narrows and the spirituality returns. I find myself loving more intensely those whom I have loved with all my heart and mind and strength. And loving them more, I find it easier to abide their counsel. Personal honesty is a must in individual happiness and true leadership. Certainly, it is greater to be trusted than loved. A worthy daily prayer for all of us is, Lord, help me to be honest with myself. Help me to be true to myself. Jesus taught in plainness. Jesus, the master teacher, taught love, hope, and faith with perfect integrity, even with a perfect life. Oftentimes, I thank God that one of our articles of faith does not say, we believe in being honest. It is more compelling and reasonable to me to have it say, we believe in being honest. Over the years, it has not only been rewarding but challenging to hear by the grapevine, if you please, Marvin J. Ashton can be trusted. Be honest in your classes. Be honest in your offices. Be honest in your human relationships. Be honest in your preparations. Be honest in your counseling procedures. Be honest in your daily lives. I thank God for leaders like you who instill in others the overwhelming influence of integrity in all things. I thank God Brigham Young University has the best administrators, faculty, and support staff of any university in the world. With that recognition, our challenge is to rise to new heights. Early on, I can remember a good father saying, I would rather have my son drink 10 cups of coffee a day than tell a lie. He didn't want me to drink coffee either. He was just setting proper priorities. Some top students and associates can be destroyed by people who are not honest in their comments and instruction. Sad but true, some would rather share flattery or tickle the ear than indulge in constructive instruction. Let me share a few thoughts about education and teaching with wisdom and being wise enough to make decisions that are worthy. I carry in my daily date book a few brief memo sheets that I like to open to and refer to frequently. One sheet is almost worn out now and has nothing more on it than a quotation from Jacob 6, verse 12. Oh, be wise. What can I say more? Be wise enough to accept appropriate discipline and guidelines. Be wise enough to say the right words at the right time to the right person. Be wise enough to live and teach within designated guidelines. Be wise enough to know there's always going to be opposition from those who would have us trip or falter or fail. We need scholars, teachers, and administrators who are balanced. We need intellectuals who are intelligent. We need probers who aggressively pursue the truth. We need researchers who are willing to pray. We need teachers who teach with Christ-like parables. Ever bear in mind that Jesus was the wisest of the wise, even brilliant in his relationships with people. And now, a certain prophet, Spencer W. Kimball, on one occasion, a few years ago, asked me to accompany him to the Utah State Prison. If you please, he invited me to go to the vineyard with him because I, Marvin J. Ashton, knew the location as a visitor. He wanted to spend time with those confined to prison. On this occasion, I heard and saw a prophet declare glad tidings in a way that has left me with an everlasting impression. It was a unique invitation. It was an unusual request. I doubt that any other apostle in modern days has had an experience like this one, or close to it. I learned much from a prophet who was wise. May I say, in the beginning, when he first asked me to accompany him to the prison at the point of the mountain, incidentally, every time I drive by, I think of the experience I had there, I felt impressed to say to him when he first invited me, "President Kimball, I don't want you to go to the prison for a visit. I've had enough experience there to know that your life would be in danger. And some people would do anything to get attention, embarrass, or even harm you." I guess this is one of the first times that someone in the ranks has counseled a prophet this way, but I took it upon myself. "President Kimball, if you don't mind, let's not go right now." And he took my advice, and a few days later, the phone rang, and he talked to me on the phone again. I said, "Marv," that's what he used to call me on a good day, "Marv, I want to go to the prison with you." I could tell that he was earnest and very sincere. The time for delay was over. I called the warden and asked him if we could come down the following day and visit with him and two inmates of his choice. He agreed, and I took President Kimball to the institution. We were greeted by the warden and then taken to his office. He hadn't been there very long when two inmates were invited to come in and meet with us. They were in their prison garb, and I don't mind telling you, I was uncomfortable. They looked so hard. I felt very uneasy when the steel door slammed behind us and we were left alone with the two of them and the prophet, myself, and the warden. President Kimball shook their hands before we all sat down. This was followed by a brief period of intense silence. The prisoners were shackled and looking at the floor. President Kimball was looking at them, and I was looking at President Kimball. After this awkward period of silence was over, President Kimball started off with what seemed to be an unusual approach. The thought crossed my mind that he could say, "What are you in here for? Why did you do it? When do you get out? You ought to be ashamed of yourselves. Or what is your previous record?" To my pleasure and further education and for their involvement, he looked at the one and said, to my surprise, "Tell me about your mother." The prisoner responded and told President Kimball and others of us assembled about his mother, the details of which are not important for my purposes today. When this was over, with the prisoner doing the talking and President Kimball doing the listening, he finally looked at the other prisoner and said, "What does your father do for a living?" He too responded with comments, and the prophet gave complete attention and listened intently. In a few minutes, I had seen and heard a prophet counsel and interview. They looked at him. They responded and looked in his face while he gently listened. Before our interview was over, word had spread that President Spencer W. Kimball was at the prison visiting. And some of the media were outside the doors waiting for pictures and conversation with President Kimball. President Kimball invited some of the press into the room with a cameraman. One reporter said, "President Kimball would like to have a picture of you talking to these two inmates." President Kimball grinned at the interview by standing up promptly and getting between the two prisoners as the picture was taken. "I recall, for your information and future use, I recall with vivid impact, as though it were this morning, what he said after the picture was taken with those two hardened prisoners. He shook one hand and then the other and said, 'Thank you, boys, for letting me have my picture taken with you.' One of those hardened prisoners was in for murder, and the other for grand larceny. To say they were touched and responsive is an understatement. I will never forget, and remember this well, if you will, the impact of this visit upon me and my future. A wise, gentle prophet conducted his interview without embarrassment, without ridicule, and without condemnation. I know I've told this story before and shared it around the church and feel impressed to relive it with you for just a few moments today as we think of interviewing, counseling, instructing, educating, and touching lives with wisdom. Frankly, I still wonder if President Kimball's main purpose for the visit was to see the prisoners or to teach a green apostle in a live classroom. How wonderful it would be if we could counsel with wisdom under all circumstances. A well-respected administrator, teacher should be skilled in asking the right questions. Some months later, after having this teaching session and studying to practice it, Lance Reynolds, will you come up and stand by me for a minute? Another part of the vineyard, when you see the size of Lance, you know I'm asking him up here, so if my remarks are so bad and I have difficulty getting out here, say if you can pick me up and take me out. Questioning, a mother and a father were in my office, accompanied by a 265-pound BYU sophomore, all whack tackle. They had asked for an appointment. Not to settle a family confusion or a problem, but I think they have a third or fourth opinion. After we greeted the mother and the father and their son, Lance Reynolds, we had a few words of friendly conversation. I knew why they had come. The trying decision was, does Lance go on a mission or does he stay and play football? I looked at the mother, remembering the lesson of President Kimball, hopefully, looked her in the eye and says, what do you think your son Lance should do? She said, I think he can render a special service, an example of the church, if he maintains his standards and continues to play football, and hopefully help in bringing football fame to BYU and the church. I think that his football playing can be his mission. I looked at the father, and I said, what do you think Lance should do? He was smart enough not to disagree with him in that setting with his wife, so he merely said, bless his heart, I'm not quite certain. I looked at Lance and I said, Lance, what do you want to do? He said, I want to go on a mission. I responded with, why don't you? He said, I will. The interview was over. Lance went on his mission. Was outstanding as a missionary and came back and reaped all conference honors and is now on BYU's football coaching staff. He's a special friend of mine today. Some years after he got through with his football, the phone rang one day and he remembered the lesson. He said, Elder Ashton, I want to ask you a question. I said, go ahead, Lance. And he said, we're thinking about getting married. Would you go with me and my girlfriend and see us in the temple? We did, and we're still getting along. Thank you. I hope you can relate to these two experiences. Jesus went about doing good. Jesus taught single ideas. He drove home a single point in each of his parables. We should avoid shotgun approaches. A good lesson or interview should be like a rifle shot, to the point and with some decision reached. Let me conclude with a few thoughts in regard to being good. To be good for our purposes today is someone who is caring, someone who conducts himself in such a way that others know that service and being good to all others under every circumstance is nothing more than the abundant life. Being good does not start in the classroom or in the office of the administrators. It is an every hour significant way of life. Let us ever remember that being good is a pleasure, a joy beyond measure. Let us lead in such a manner that being good is a way of life that must be natural, commonplace, and sincere. I like to think of someone as good in the full sense of the word when they care about others without thought of self. What greater recognition and honor can come to anyone than to be identified as a good teacher, a good mentor, a good friend? Jesus Christ, I remind you, was the master teacher. Stalwarts like B.Y.U.'s Hugh Nibley teaches us much when he said, quote, "I have always been furiously active in the church, but I have never held an office or rank in anything. I have undertaken many assignments given me by the leaders of the church, and much of the work has been anonymous. No rank or recognition, no anything. While I have been commended for some things, they were never the thing which I considered most important. That was entirely a little understanding between me and my Heavenly Father, which I have thoroughly enjoyed, though no one else knows anything about it." Close quote. A recent Wall Street Journal editorial made the following observation. Los Angeles has brought home to the country and the world what people close to the cauldron have been saying for a long time. No progress is possible in America, in its most troubled parts, while so many people grow up without parents, without dignity, without knowledge, without education, without morals, or without respect from others or from within themselves. In a word, without hope, they live. Let me conclude by saying, I thank God for good people like you who are willing to be reminded and hopefully instructed by one who has a few thoughts that possibly can be helpful. The glory of God is intelligence. And for my purpose today, I declare there is no true intelligence without honesty, wisdom, and goodness. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.